Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A few weeks back here on All of It, we were joined by Molly West Duffy and Liz Fosline, co-authors of the book Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay, to discuss the best strategies to manage big feelings. There was so much to discuss that we couldn't fit it all into the segment, so we decided to invite Liz and Molly back every day this week to take on one big feeling from the book a day and to take your calls for a series we're calling Big Feelings Week. Today we're discussing perfectionism and the ways perfectionism can create an unnecessary pressure to succeed and how it can have a negative impact on our mental health and everyday life. With us to discuss perfectionism and take your calls is Liz Fosline, one of the co-authors of the book, Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. Hey, Liz.
Hi, great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. And listeners, do you consider yourself a perfectionist? Why do you think that is? Does it affect your daily life? Call us at 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Or you can tweet us at allofitwnyc. How do you think being a perfectionist influences how you think about work, relationships, your own mental health? Are you trying to be less of a perfectionist? Or on the other hand, do you think perfectionism has gotten you to where you are today? What do you think? Call us, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. And Liz, let's start hearing about how you have personally struggled with perfectionism. You start a chapter by writing, "For most of my life, I thought I had to be perfect to be loved." What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so this showed up. I mean, it's honestly still shows up sometimes for me. I think recovering from perfectionism is not a perfect immediate process, but it showed up at work. So I remember my first job, I just thought I could never ask questions, admit I'd made a mistake. I had to know everything immediately. I could never be late. I could never take a sick day or I would get fired. So that's an example of this extremist perfectionist thinking. And what's unique about perfectionism is that many people think it's about striving to be perfect, but it's actually about trying to avoid failure and being terrified that if you fail, everything will crumble. The story I open the book, that chapter in the book with, is about actually my relationship with my now husband. But when we first started dating, you know, I had all this, I call it sort of single girl behavior that I had not revealed to him in the first 6 months of us dating. I have these hideous sweatpants. I still have them. I have like a hole in them.
Don't we all have hideous sweatpants?
Totally. Yeah. You know, I mean, like looking back, these are not ridiculous things, but I was, you know, I was ashamed of them. I didn't want him to know that sometimes for dinner I made popcorn and put Cheese Whiz on it and ate it with a spoon. You know, like I was just like, that's not who he wants to date. And then about a year into our relationship, when we were talking about moving in together, I started having severe panic attacks because I realized he was going to see all of these parts of myself that I had very nicely hidden away from him. And that I talk about how I had to go to therapy because it really started to reveal to me how much I was clinging to this idea of like, he loves me because I am this certain person. But the moment he sees the full extent of my, you know, ridiculousness, he will leave me.
Well, I don't mean to be silly about it, but allow me to suggest that one quick cure for perfectionism is live radio, because that'll humble you very quickly. Now, according to your book, over the past 30 years, the desire to be perfect has shot up by nearly 33% in the Western world. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, so a lot of it has to do with social media. So more and more, we're just exposed to people's highlight reels. So we have this incorrect assumption that everyone else's life is perfect and curated. And with ourselves, you know, you don't just see your own highlight reel. You're very aware of all of the like dark parts of yourself that come up. I know when Molly and I were interviewing people for the book as part of our research, we spoke to one woman who had chosen a career that she was very happy in, felt very fulfilled. And then she said she would go on LinkedIn and she said, everyone is a vice president except for me. And then she would go on Instagram and say, everyone's living room looks like it's out of a catalog except for mine. And so I think that's part of it. And there's also, I think it speaks to this larger trend of we are more quantified than ever. There's infinite ways now that you can measure yourself, likes, followers, you know, even just like the ranking of the college you're going to, the ranking of the company you're working for. And I think that has this effect on us that if you put a ranking in front of someone, they're going to start to feel pressure to climb up that ranking.
Well, if you want to join this conversation, please give us a call. The number 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. I see many of you joining in right now. Let's hear from Nicole in Kew Gardens. Did you want to join?
Yeah, I do. Thanks for addressing this topic. This is a very vulnerable comment I'm about to make, but it's also very pertinent. And if it can help someone, I hope that my vulnerability is helpful. So my 10-year-old son was actually just hospitalized in a psychiatric hospital last week because of the results of perfectionism. And I want to talk about how perfectionism is a not a nurture versus is a nurture versus nature sort of thing. So I suffer from perfectionism, which my whole goal of being a parent was not to pass that on. So we don't expect perfectionism, but this one of our children definitely came into the world with that same propensity towards perfectionism, thinking that he, like, he's only 10, but thinking that he needed to know everything before it was taught to him, thinking that he had to do perfectly on the baseball field before he even was taught the skills. And if he didn't, not only was his like negative voice inside his head telling him that he was bad, but like it got to the point where he started like harming himself because he thought that if he wasn't perfect, he was a bad person. So perfectionism can be in some ways innocuous and make you strive to do things really well. And in other ways can really affect one's mental health to the point where it can keep you from living the life that you are meant to lead and keep you from feeling the love that is inherently surrounding you. And I just have great compassion out there for the people who are suffering from a perfectionism that can be so debilitating because I've seen it firsthand and it can be devastating. So Nicole, thank you for addressing this issue.
Nicole, thank you so much for sharing. Liz, do you want to address that?
Yeah, I just want to second that. Thank you for sharing. And I think this is one of the things that we have found in our work and we say in the book is that these moments of vulnerability of talking about the profoundly negative and destructive effects of things like perfectionism, I think that really is the first step towards figuring out solutions and helping other people feel more comfortable sharing if they're struggling with it. So really appreciate you saying that. And yeah, I think it's a great point that a lot of people with perfectionist tendencies don't want to let those tendencies go because they think if I lose this, I'll just become a couch potato and I won't have any drive. And in fact, this story, I think, is a extreme, and I don't want to call it great, but it is a powerful example of perfectionism does not help you, right? It's really about this beating yourself up beyond the point of being motivational anymore. And in fact, if you could let go of some of those tendencies, you would actually perform better. So yeah, thank you again for sharing your story.
If you'd like to join, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Let's hear from John in Plainfield, New Jersey, with a different perspective. John?
Yes. Hello. My name is John, and I'm from Plainfield. And I just like to say that perfectionism has helped me because I am a funeral director. I own 3 funeral homes, one in New Jersey and 2 in New Jersey and 1 in New York. And I'm a perfectionist when it comes to my funerals, because when someone dies and you give them a funeral, you want them to be perfect. And I'm very controlling. And that's why they call us funeral directors. You want everything to be right, from the appearance of the cars, the appearance of the staff, the way that the people answer the telephones, the appearance of the deceased. You just want everything to be perfect. And that's, I think, one of the main reasons for my success. I drive my staff and my daughter mad. From time to time.
John, thank you for sharing that. Liz, what about this flip side of perfectionism here?
Yeah, so I would categorize that potentially more as just striving to deliver great experiences. So the difference here between that and the perfectionism that we talk about in the book, which is much more self-destructive, is striving is aiming for 100%, getting a 98%, and sort of still feeling like, okay, we overall delivered something good. I'm not actually sure if that's your situation or if you would not be happy with the 98%. But perfectionism is striving for the 100%, getting a 99%, and then just spending weeks obsessing over that one question you didn't get right and having kind of, you know, just anxiety, your palms are sweating, and just really beating yourself up to the point where you can't focus on anything else. And so I think that's the difference. If it's really limiting your ability to perform, if it's, and you see every opportunity gives you, you know, you feel your heart starting to palpitate because you're terrified of not being the absolute best that you could be, that's what we talk about. And that is a little different than saying like, this is an opportunity for me to shine, and I'm going to do my best. And if one thing doesn't go right, we're going to try and fix it next time, but it's not going to ruin my month.
And let's hear from some more of you. This Michael in Newark, we're speaking with Liz Fosline, by the way, co-author of the book, Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. Michael in Newark, are you with us?
Hi, yes, I am.
Did you want to share a thought about perfectionism?
Well, yes, I agree with almost everything that everyone has commented on, and the last comment was more towards what I was thinking, that my perfectionism just destroyed me. I got into addiction of many things. Drugs, alcohol, food, exercise, work, gambling, smoking. As I think perfectionism was very instrumental in that. What I've learned is that I used perfectionism because it was a pretty good tool. It got a lot done and it was effective, except I didn't see that there's a good side to perfectionism and a bad side. And I ignored the bad side. I didn't know how to manage it. And I didn't know that it was good for some things, but then it could be carried too far. And part of my recovering is learning how to manage it in a way that it doesn't destroy me, but that I could take advantage of it.
Liz, do you want to talk about what Michael is saying, how not to ignore the bad side?
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think not ignoring is really being honest, which it sounds like Michael is doing, about the cost of perfectionism. And then a couple ways, because I agree, I think, you know, striving to do well, to live up to a certain ideal or a standard you've set to yourself is not inherently a bad thing and can be very motivational. So a couple of tips to embrace that part of yourself, but not sink into this self-destructive perfectionist mentality. The first is really just getting rid of the words always and never. So the moment you start to feel yourself beat yourself up again in this internal dialogue of like, good moms never get frustrated with their children. Usually always and never are signs that you're thinking in these black and white terms. And that's, it's usually, it's inaccurate. So just rephrasing, trying to think of a different way to say it, as opposed to always, never, and thinking there's more gray in between.
Well, we just have a few seconds left. I want to try to squeeze one more caller in. This is Janine calling in from Bergen County, New Jersey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'll be quick. I'm a psychotherapist. I work with children, adolescents. And my over 20 years of experience with this situation is that I've begun to understand what perfectionism is. Oh, myself, you know, included, when I was in graduate school, it was pointed out to me. I'm like, oh, okay. But in working with kids, I see how they, of course, they compare themselves to everybody else, you know. And I'll say, well, you know, you're living, this is a lie. You're telling yourself a lie. And I say to them, this is really like a, you know, a distortion in reality. It's not, it's irrational. And once I get to, well, how to explain that to them. And so tell me sometime when somebody else in your class got something wrong. Did you look at them immediately and say, oh, how stupid they are? They go, no. So pointing out, you know. So.
Yeah. Liz, we won't be able to finish perfectly here, but do you have a last thought in the last few seconds?
Yeah, I think it's great to point out those distortions. And I've found it really valuable for myself and for others to say, would you say that to your friend or to your loved one? And you should start speaking to yourself as you would to a loved one, and you'll probably be a little less hard on yourself. Hmm.
All this week, we're discussing big feelings with Liz Fosslien and Molly West Duffy, co-authors of the book Big Feelings, How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. Liz, thanks for joining us, and thank you for all of the phone calls.
Thanks for having me.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.